ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Wednesday, the 5th of November. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The Federal Coalition is tearing itself apart over the net zero climate policy of cutting carbon dioxide emissions to a small amount by 2050, something Australia's signed up to and businesses have made valuable investments on. The National Party's ditched the policy and it's trying to drag the Liberals to that position too, but it's become a proxy battle about leadership, with the chance that the Liberal Party's first female leader might be claimed as a result. She joined me earlier. Susan Lee, thanks for joining AM.
It's a pleasure, Sabra.
You've been leader for 6 months now, nearly 6 months. Have you been given a fair go in leading the Liberals and the Coalition?
It's an enormous privilege to lead the Liberal Party, and I'm very proud of my team. And I said as leader, when I became leader, there wouldn't be any captain's calls. We'd take the time to work through policy. We would also articulate clear differences between ourselves and Labor. And I've done that with two important economic speeches.
Sure.
Guaranteeing that we'll have a plan for personal income taxes, tax cuts at the next election, and also talking about how we would manage the economy responsibly. And so I make those points.
I was going to say, to the point of that question, though, have you been given a fair go? Because the Nats have put you in a very unenviable position on the net zero policy. You either back that and you split the coalition, or you walk away from it and you lose your moderate supporters and face a potential leadership challenge sooner rather than later.
Well, this is all commentary. David Littleproud and I talked when we became the coalition at the last election, when we reformed the coalition, if you like. And we said we would individually work on policies within our respective party rooms and that we'd come together as a coalition to decide on the big issues, including energy. And that's exactly what's happening. So
but
I'm
on
not
that,
here to determine. But Sabra, I'm not here to determine the Nationals' timeline, nor are they here to determine the Liberals' timeline.
But have the Nats shown you and the Liberals any respect? Barnaby Joyce said yesterday, we've moved this whole agenda to exactly where I want it to be. And it's like I've done this before. And he's bragging about dragging the Liberals and you to the Nationals' position. And he has done that before. How irritating is that?
I'm not going to comment on what he has said, except to say that when I spoke... Well, no, because the leader of the Nationals is actually David Littleproud. I spoke to him on Sunday. He called me to say, look, we've reached a position. I said, I expect the Liberals to reach a position soon. Let's you and I sit down and work through our respective positions with the aim of staying in a coalition. And Sabra, you haven't asked me about the one thing that I know will be on a lot of households' minds this morning, which is the fact that there's no rate cut for Christmas, that we have inflation rising, and that some economists are actually saying interest rates will go up. And I know that millions of mortgage holders are very worried about that, and I know that this government does not have a plan to address it.
It might be the case. I'm sorry, Susan Lee, but the coalition is making itself the story. The moderates have sent you a strong message yesterday. Tim Wilson said, the Liberal Party is not National Party light. You need to stand up as a leader of the party for the Liberal Party. Andrew Bragg said, I don't see how we can walk away from our commitment to reduce emissions. Their MPs and their people who backed you, they're saying these things publicly, and the coalition is making itself the story.
Well, Sabra, it won't surprise you to know that I'm not commenting on commentary, but I will say this. You're asking me to comment on with respect. And as leader, I said there wouldn't be any captain's calls, and I'd listen to my team, and that's exactly what I'm doing.
All right, here's a simple question.
Continuing to interrupt me, can I make this point? We will land a Liberal Party position in our Liberal Party party room very soon, and everyone will have their say, and I'm listening to them every day, and we do need to get this right, and we need Liberal Party policy to come out of our party room.
Do you personally believe in net zero carbon emissions by 2050?
I've always said we cannot have net zero at any cost. I said that on day one of my leadership, and I'll say it 6 months later. And the one thing that people are telling us as members of the opposition travel around the country is how difficult it is to meet the 40% increase rise in energy costs that they're experiencing under this Labor government. Sabra, I stood at Tomago on Friday, and the reality is the biggest user of energy, our biggest aluminium smelter in Australia, a really important industry for sovereign manufacturing capability in this country, is looking at closing because the cost of energy is too high. Now, that is a massive failure of this government. It's not just about the 1,000 direct jobs, vital though they are, and critical though they are to the future of the region and our country. It's about huge national scale failures of energy, and it's a really big warning sign. I think it's the sixth smelter that's in trouble, and what that tells you is that we have policy under this government that is not about making things in Australia. It's about bailing out Australian companies.
Electorally, the Liberals have been punished already for perceptions that you're not serious about dealing with climate change. The Liberals lost 15 seats at the last election. How do you think ditching net zero policy will help you regain those seats?
We did have a very poor result at the last election, and I've been very upfront about acknowledging that. And shortly we'll have the review that I asked Prue Goward and Nick Minchin to complete. And I also said I'd make that public, and that will talk about the detailed reasons for the result. And it's important that we do that, and it's important that we consider that carefully. And it's also important that we listen to Australians. And I've been listening to them on energy policy. I've been listening to them on their struggles to meet the cost of living crisis that so many are experiencing. Because consider this, Sabra, with this massive, massive spending by the government, even called out by the Reserve Bank and others yesterday, and even responded to for the first time, I think, in Parliament by the Treasurer, he acknowledged that spending is too high. Australians are rightly saying, what are we getting for this? Because our interest rates are going up, our mortgage payments are about to, you know, possibly go up again. And meanwhile, more and more are in stress, financial stress, cost of living stress. What are we actually getting for this massive government spend? This is, this is a huge failure.
Backbencher and leadership aspirant Andrew Hastie last week intervened in a debate about extending parental leave to those who had had stillborn babies, and he questioned whether it would apply to late-term abortions. This was interpreted as sort of positing that women would deliberately terminate a baby to collect government money. How surprised were you by that intervention?
We supported Priya's bill. It's a really important bill. We should be supporting women through tragic events where a baby is lost. Losing a baby is one of the most difficult things that can ever happen to a mother and to a family. And as a mother and a grandmother, this is very personal. So any commentary about this bill applying in other contexts is insensitive.
He is leadership material. Does he deserve to be a leader when he says these sorts of things publicly?
I'm once more not talking about individuals in my party room or individual comments. I'm making a point about the importance of this bill and the real struggle that mothers face in the circumstances where they do lose a baby. And it's a very difficult thing for a lot of women to talk about. And the last thing I'm going to do is issue judgments on mothers. And I'm certainly very supportive of the bill, as is my team.
We are nearing the end of the parliamentary year. For many years, that final week has been dubbed the killing season. How confident are you that you will be the leader when Parliament rises?
I'm completely confident, and I have a smile on my face as I answer this, because I know that the media and commentary does get a little bit excited from time to time. But Sabra, I said when I became leader that I would work incredibly hard for the things that matter, the national interest, the Australian people, the people who take risks, who believe in the future of this country, who work hard every day and who deserve a better government in Canberra than what we're seeing right here, right now. And yesterday, with no rate cut before Christmas and with just the prospect of expenses rising and rising over time, we can do so much better, and we will fight this fight every day.
Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Sabra.
Federal Opposition Leader Susan Lee. Australia's domestic spy chief is warning there's a realistic possibility a foreign government will try to assassinate a dissident on Australian soil, saying at least three nations are willing and capable of carrying out such an operation. The Director General of Security, Mike Burgess, delivered a major speech in Sydney last night, and he's repeated his caution that foreign governments are trying to undermine Australia's social cohesion and critical infrastructure while stepping up efforts to steal national secrets. Here's Foreign Affairs reporter Stephen Jedgetts.
Mike Burgess has delivered a series of grim speeches in recent years, and last night's Lowy Institute lecture was no exception.
Tonight, I will explore how the security threats are damaging our cohesion and how a damaged cohesion is amplifying security threats.
Mr. Burgess has become an increasingly public figure, delivering stark warnings about foreign interference. The ASIO head telling a packed Sydney town hall that social media is driving polarisation, tearing at Australia's social fabric, and that some foreign governments spot opportunities.
Authoritarian regimes demonstrates a chilling willingness to exploit our fault lines in countries they consider hostile.
Iran is at the top of that list. In August, Australia expelled its ambassador after ASIO said it had uncovered evidence that the regime orchestrated at least two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia. But Mr. Burgess warned some countries might be willing to go further and target critics on Australian soil.
We believe there are at least three nations willing and capable of conducting lethal targeting here. It's entirely possible the regimes would try to hide their involvement by hiring criminal cutouts, as Iran did when directing its arson attacks.
He didn't name the countries, but after the lecture said his message to them was clear.
By mentioning it publicly, I'm also putting them on notice that we know that some of you are prepared to do this, and we will do our damnedest to stop it before it happens.
That's not to say they'd succeed. Mr. Burgess was quick to stress ASIO was acutely alive to the threat and working round the clock to prevent any attacks, while also boasting about the agency's success dealing with more traditional challenges, like the time a foreign spy agency believed it had convinced an Australian who'd helped them gather intelligence to travel to a third country to meet them, only to be met instead by an ASIO officer instead of their intended target.
We told them Australians were off limits, and we warned them we would disrupt their operations whenever and wherever we chose. And of course, we sent our regards to the head of their service.
Chris Taylor from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute says the Director General's strategy is clear. Mr. Burgess is using his public profile to try and shift the way Australians think about national security threats.
Burgess sincerely believes ASIO can't effectively address the myriad threats now facing Australia, from spies, saboteurs, terrorists, etc., without a significantly different mindset on the part of Australians. In short, a genuinely national approach to national security. And to achieve that requires public awareness and public empowerment.
And the message goes beyond that, Mr. Burgess warning that cycles of grievance, intolerance and polarisation, particularly online, are bleeding into the real world.
My concern is a more vulnerable, fractured and intolerant society means a less predictable and increasingly volatile security environment.
As usual, the greatest sources of strength and weakness lie within.
Stephen Jedgetts. The federal government's been under pressure for most of this year over the massive waiting list for aged home care packages, now at 121,000 people. Yet before anyone can join that queue, they must first be assessed, and that waiting list is disturbingly similar, with more than 116,000 Australians on it. Critics say the crisis is due to the government's decision to partly privatise the aged care assessment system. Anne Connolly reports.
In February, 74-year-old Peter O'Shaughnessy, who had throat cancer, was approved for an aged care package at home. Months later, when he was diagnosed as terminal, he was told he needed to be reassessed to get urgent support services. His daughter, Eloise Randall, says she spent days trying to get an appointment with Aspire for Life, one of more than a dozen companies who were last year awarded government contracts worth more than $1.2 billion to do aged care assessments.
Dad's needs were increasing by the moment. You know, we needed personal care assistance, we needed nursing. Aspire for Life gave Mum and Dad a reassessment date of 8 weeks into the future, and that was the most urgent time they could get there.
Peter died 4 weeks before his reassessment without any support.
He spent his last couple of weeks feeling like he was drowning, lying on a couch that was unsuitable for him, and in a lot of fear and anxiety.
Aspire for Life, which was responsible for Peter's aged care assessment but not his medical care, said it couldn't comment on his case because of its contract with the government, but said the high demand for assessment services is universally acknowledged. For decades, clinicians from public state health departments did aged care assessments for home and residential care. In December last year, the government partially privatised the system. Coral Wilkinson is a former ACAT assessor who now helps families navigate the aged care system, including those waiting for assessments. She believes the partial privatisation is the cause of the huge delays.
These people have been waiting for months already. And, you know, some people are waiting 9 and 10 months and their cases are urgent and they don't know when they're going to be assessed and their families are at breaking point.
The wait list for assessments now sits at 116,000. That's almost equal to the number of Australians waiting for a home care package. Coral Wilkinson says the government and some assessment companies weren't prepared and didn't have the necessary workforce.
I think there was some naivety on the part of the department and perhaps some of the newer assessing organisations who didn't really understand the level of knowledge and expertise that is required to assess older people who particularly have higher and more complex needs.
The Department of Health said the median wait time for assessments is 23 days and that it continues to drop.
Anne Connolly. The popular online messaging board Reddit will be included in Australia's world first social media ban for children under 16, which starts on December the 10th. The online safety regulator says the prohibition will also include the live streaming platform Kick. They'll join other platforms, Snapchat, TikTok, YouTube, X, Facebook and Instagram, which includes Threads in the prohibition. The opposition is questioning how the ban will be enforced and what the social media companies will do with young teens' existing data. Samantha Dick explains.
There's only 1 month to go until the relentless ping of social media notifications on young Australians' phones will suddenly, in theory, fall silent. From the 10th of December, when Australia's world-leading social media ban comes into effect, major social media platforms that fail to take reasonable steps to keep Australians aged under 16 from holding an account will face fines of up to $49.5 million. Shadow Communications Minister Melissa McIntosh says the stakes are high for the Albanese government to get it right.
There's a lot at risk because the world is now watching Australia for the success of this ban in getting kids offline and protecting children.
Communications Minister Annika Wells will today confirm messaging board Reddit and live streaming platform Kick will join the online safety regulator's list of age-restricted apps, which includes Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, YouTube and X. At a Senate hearing last week, officials representing TikTok, Meta and Snap all said they would begin blocking young teenagers from their platforms when the new laws take effect. Snapchat wants to implement a tool for underage users to download and archive their data before their accounts are disabled. TikTok is exploring options such as giving young people the ability to deactivate or suspend an account, while Meta is looking to provide similar options to users on Instagram and Facebook. Ms. McIntosh says questions remain around these companies storing children's data until they turn 16.
Just the practicalities of holding on to somebody's social media account for an extended period. There's question marks around that as well and where that information gets stored and how people access that. So there's a lot. A month out, you'd think all of these questions would be answered.
Caroline Thane from National Youth Mental Health Service Headspace agreed there's still a lot we don't know about how these bans will work, but encouraged parents to start talking to their children now.
These are big changes in young people's lives, and it's so important that we start the conversation now.
Ms. Thane said asking the right questions can help young Australians get their head around the ban before it comes into effect.
You can move from a really broad question like, what do you think this is going to mean for you and your young person shutting it down, to then something quite specific, so a more closed question like, aren't you on X platform, whatever that might be? What is it going to mean when you can't be on that?
Parents can visit the eSafety website for tips on how to explain the social media ban.
Samantha Dick there, and that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. He's the polar opposite to Donald Trump. A young Muslim, political novice and democratic socialist is tracking to become the next mayor of New York City. Today, Jeff Kabasevis from the centre-right think tank, the Niskanen Centre, on how Zoran Mamdani managed to capture the attention of New York voters. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.